Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome back, everybody, to the X-Cast X-Files Podwatch, episode 37, covering Wet Wired and Tilifakumi. I'm your host, Carl Sweeney, and I'm joined once again by a man I'd wager has forgotten more about the X-Files than most people will ever know, and his name is Chris Knowles. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Here we are.
Here we are, indeed. So, just a reminder, Chris is the co-author of the Complete X-Files book, and his blog is The Secret Sun. All right, then. So, just before we get into these two episodes, I thought maybe a word on, like, the series at this point. So, this is obviously the end of Season 3. I'd imagine it had been a very challenging, taxing, but rewarding year for everybody involved. What do you know? What can you tell us about, you know, how people were feeling as the show came to the end of its third season?
Everybody was exhausted.
Yeah.
Chris Carter had begun work on Millennium at this point. They were in talks for the feature film. I mean, there was a lot going on. This was a very, very busy period for them. It was all hands on deck. They had a lot of weather problems.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So shooting was kind of problematic at this point in time. A lot of rain at this, you know, towards the end of this season, and it held up production quite a bit. Yeah, a lot of things going. The series is going like gangbusters. It's really picking up. It's really at its peak of, you know, hip, cool hotness. It's, you know, a media sensation. David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson are on magazine covers everywhere you look. It's really a bona fide phenomenon, tapped into the pop culture zeitgeist. A lot of big fans in rock groups and things like that. And we'd see like songs in the Key of X, that kind of thing. Just a very exciting time. You know, Chris Carter has always said that this was his, you know, favorite season of all. You know, they felt like they were firing on all cylinders, basically.
Yeah, so this is May 1996 when both of these episodes were first broadcast. So the first one is Wet Wired. It's the 23rd episode of the season. Written by Matt Beck, directed by Rob Bowman. And this is the episode in which the agents investigate a series of murders which they link back to television viewing. So before we get into, you know, how good this is as an episode, what can you tell me about how Matt Beck got involved here? Because I believe he was the visual effects supervisor and he ended up writing this script. Do you know what the context is for that?
Here's the deal. One thing that particularly Frank Spotnitz has always said is that you can't go by the credits on X-Files episodes. This is actually a quote-unquote John Gilnitz script. John Scheiben, Vince Gilligan, and Frank Spotnitz, I believe, wrote the lion's share of the script. It could be that Matt Beck had the original, maybe he did a treatment. I don't know how much of the script he actually wrote. I believe that Chris Carter actually had done some rewrites on this. So really what's going on in 1013 is that, with the exception of Darren Morgan, scripts are really passed around. They go through different levels of rewrites and things like that. So I don't know how much of this is actually a Matt Beck script. I mean, it seems to me, it feels to me like classic archetypal X-Files. You know, you're hitting all the story beats that you see throughout, particularly this season. And I believe that most of this is, like I said, a Scheiben, Gilligan, Spotnitz production.
Yeah, I'm sure I've seen an interview with Carter from around this time, or maybe early in the fourth season, where he said that he rewrote in some way, shape, or form 22 of the 24 episodes. He, you know, either wrote or rewrote them.
Well, see, here's the thing. I believe I did put it in the book. Tim Manners said something very interesting. He said, it doesn't matter who wrote the script, whose name you see on the credits. He said that everything went through Chris Carter's word processor, that the voice of the characters, you know, particularly the patter between Mulder and Scully, sort of the jargon, the techno babble in some ways, the voices of the characters, particularly the main characters, are almost always a Chris Carter rewrite. So every script is polished by the writing team and goes to Chris Carter before it's put into production. And you can really kind of tell this. I mean, it's interesting because Darren Morgan was very good at mimicking Chris Carter's distinctive type of language, you know, particularly in the Mulder Scully patter. There are just certain passages in this particular story that very much feel like Carter to me, you know, particularly some of the Scully scenes.
Right. Okay.
It gets to the point that no matter who is credited as the writer, those four, what I call the four horsemen of the X-Files, yeah, are working on it at some stage of production. I mean, they become the four executive producers. Towards the end of the series, Vince Gilligan is basically running the writer's room. You know, Frank is essentially the showrunner in the last season. That's the thing that I think is very important for fans to realize about this particular season, is that this is really the season with that four core writing team really start to take shape. You know, because don't forget, I mean, Scheiben is new this season. Vince Gilligan is still relatively new, but they really gel. Frank, Vince, and John really hit it off. They really gel. They really feel, you know, that they're on the same playing field. And that really becomes the voice of the X-Files from this point forward.
All right, so questions of authorship aside, what about this episode then? How well do you think it works?
Oh, I think this is a solid 10. This is one of my favorite episodes. It's interesting because what this really is a kind of almost like a remake of Blood. It's following the same story arc. It's dealing with the same issues. But I think it does so. I mean, Blood to me is a really solid season two episode, you know, very well done. But it's kind of maybe a little too light for the subject matter. Mm. This episode is just pitch black. I mean, it's just dark as pitch. The treatment this theme is given is really more appropriate to how, you know, disturbing and in real life this is. I mean, this is, you know, all based on real technological issues, you know, potentials, things like that. I mean, the whole issue of subliminals, they talk about the history of subliminals. I mean, subliminals are still used today. I mean, they're not used perhaps maybe in the same way that they once were in the 50s and so on, you know, the things that they reference in the script. But, I mean, it's everywhere. You know, subliminals are everywhere. So this is a very dark episode that I think does the subject matter justice, you know, really puts across the feeling of paranoia and dread that the X-Files, I think, did on its best days, you know.
One area where it differs from Blood is that here, obviously, Scully gets caught up in the events. What did you think of Gillian Anderson's performance? She kind of embodies that paranoia and dread that you spoke of, I suppose.
Oh, it's fantastic. And especially the way it develops, you know, it doesn't just pop out of the ether. You see her step by step being pulled under this magic spell. It's like a disease. It's a progressive disease. And she plays it so beautifully. And, you know, just these kind of white knuckle scenes of the scene in her mother's house, just brilliantly played by everyone. And the thing I really love is that David Duchovny sort of got a lot of criticism for maybe underplaying too often, but I love the way he underplays that scene, because you really get a sense of Mulder as a character. It almost feels to me that in moments like this, he has almost like an autonomic response to get very cool, to shut down his emotions. You know, a real life situation like that could get very bad very quickly. And you see that Mulder's mind, you know, the thing I love with David Duchovny is, it's, you know, the way you can see the gears working, you know, I mean, yeah, that's something he really plays well. So, you know, I see Mulder here as a character who is a professional, and that's when his professional instincts kick in, his training kicks in, you know, almost like he has experience with like hostage negotiation, you know, crisis management. And that I think is just played really beautiful. And Sheila Larkin, let's give her props too, because she just does a fantastic job here as well. And it's just such a powerful emotional moment, and just really gives you a sense of the depth of the Mulder Scully, you know, this great romance in the classical sense, not in the, you know, the Harlequin romance sense.
There's that's a great scene. There's a couple of other Duchovny moments I think are worthy of singling out, which are, you know, the same ways with the lone gunman, and he finds out that he's got to go along and identify this body.
Oh God, yeah,
that's a great moment. And also that scene with the body as well, when the sort of camera stays on him for a moment or two.
And again, it's the same. It's the same phenomenon I spoke about with the confrontation with Scully, is that his training is kicking in. He's controlling his emotions, and it's almost like he shuts off part of himself to cope with the stress of the whole crisis, which I just think is good writing and it's good acting, and it's just really strong instinctual storytelling.
Mm. I always thought it was interesting when the X-Files would deal with the medium of television in some way, and it happens a few times through the run of the series. And here, obviously, it's built into the premise of the episode, and there's some back and forth with Mulder and Scully where they talk about the causal link between TV and violence, and as I recall, Scully sort of puts forward the argument that there is a real link, and Mulder's much more dubious about that.
Well, that's actually a reference, because the X-Files have been getting a lot of criticism in the media for, you know, some of the explicit gore and horror. And this is also a time when there's sort of a moral panic around music. Marilyn Manson is very big at this stage of the game, and he's very much a source of controversy on talk shows and the TV news. So that is the X-Files writing team sort of addressing the criticism that they were receiving, you know, from the moral watchdogs of the media and so on. So they did that a lot. They would sort of dig at criticism. I mean, there's a great scene in Never Again when you know, one of the victims is lining her birdcage with Entertainment Weekly, you know, and that was because Glenn Morgan was upset about the...
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The review, Entertainment Weekly had given The Field Where I Died an F.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So he was very upset about that. So, yeah, I mean, just sort of those sly, you know, under-the-radar digs at their critics.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Before we move on to the next episode, so you get a scene at the end here with X and the Smoking Man. In the earlier parts of the episode, X wasn't present. Is he called the Plainclothes Man, the guy who...
Yeah, Tim Henry, who was also in Colony.
You sort of get a sense that X's time may be up here, and possibly the actor wasn't available as much as they wanted him or something, I don't know.
Well, this is an interesting backstory here. Stephen Williams had signed on to do a show called L.A. Heat, but he had told the producers that he was very interested in continuing to play X. Apparently he wasn't available for this shoot, so basically what they had done is that they had cast Tim Henry in this role to basically read X's lines. So all those scenes with Mulder and the Plainclothes Man are supposed to be X. They were X in the original script, but it was rewritten to be Plainclothes Man. There's some, you know, it's interesting, there's a little bit of controversy here, because Stephen Williams at a Supernatural convention sort of went on this rant that he was fired because there were conflicts with David Duchovny. And it's interesting because the article that this was written in was mysteriously vanished from the internet.
Oh.
He had just gone on this rant and said that, you know, he Duchovny was uncomfortable with him because Stephen Williams had worked with the X-Files crew on 21 Jump Street. You know, I guess there were some conflicts there. I don't know if it's ever been brought up again, but I just think it's interesting that that sort of came out. Maybe it was a bit facetious. Maybe he was sort of half kidding. It's, X to me is such a great character. I mean, yeah, one of my favorite supporting characters. Stephen Williams is a tremendous actor, did a wonderful job with that character. I really was upset when his character was killed off. You know, I don't think Marita Covarrubias was a suitable replacement for him. But there actually was, you know, earlier in the season, and I believe towards the end of the second season, you know, they always were hesitant to overuse characters. And I guess there was some discussion within the staff that X was just too much like a deus ex machina in some ways, that he would just pop in when Mulder couldn't solve a case and tell him everything that's going on and then disappear back in the shadows. And people thought that was maybe getting a little cliched. So there was some controversy, again, like I said, with his relationship towards David Duchovny, but also in the writer's room. You know, even in this episode where he's only in the last few scenes, you really get a sense of what a strong screen presence he is.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, he's still around for the next couple of episodes. So perhaps we should move on to talk about Talitha Kumi then. Talitha Kumi is the 24th episode of the third season. It has a teleplay by Chris Carter, and the story is credited to Carter and David Duchovny. The episode was directed by R.W. Goodwin, and this is the episode that begins by introducing the character of Jeremiah Smith, who possesses the ability to heal people's wounds. All right, so we ended up recording some of these episodes out of order, and in a future episode, people will hear you say that the mythology starts to take a bit of a wrong turn from Talitha Kumi onwards to around about, I think you said, up to Terma. So maybe you could just develop that thought for me, maybe. Why did the mythology go wrong here?
Well,
I
don't know if it went wrong for everybody, but one of the issues here, again, is that Chris Carter is very preoccupied with Millennium and is basically the showrunner for the first half of the season of Millennium, the primary showrunner. I believe Ken Horton takes over later on in that season. You know, I just kind of felt personally that it lacked focus and was throwing in a little too much sort of James Bond kind of melodrama for me. I loved the mythology best when it stayed more down to earth, more shadowy, where you felt less certain about what you're actually watching, particularly like, again, that Dwayne Barry Ascension One Breath trilogy. It just felt very, you know, it was on a much more human scale. I mean, once they start going to Russia and you're having people being chased by horses and trucks and, you know, I mean, it's losing sight of what made the mythology so effective. One thing about this episode is that while Chris Carter and Frank Spotnitz are working on the script, they're exhausted. I mean, they're working 20-hour days since September or July, you know, whenever the show began production. There's a lot of Talitha Kumi that I like quite a bit, but there's a lot that I kind of felt, you know, there's some retreads. They were retreading some of One Breath. You know, I mean, that's one of Chris Carter's favorite episodes. I like this episode, you know, quite a bit, and there are some very good scenes in here. But at the same time, I feel like the mythology is kind of going into a wilderness period.
Okay, yeah, well, I'd certainly say it's the weakest season finale up to this point. I don't think it compares to the Erlenmeyer Flask or Anasazi.
Oh, not. I mean, it's not even in the same ballpark as those.
No, I wouldn't say it is. No,
I mean, those are classic. Those are just dead bang classics.
Absolutely. In terms of the comparison to One Breath, I see what you mean, because you've got like the Mulder Smoking Man confrontation. You've got Mulder and X at odds with each other. Both of those things have been done before to greater dramatic effect, I'd say.
Yes.
One of the interesting things about this episode is the so-called Grand Inquisitor sequence. So I'm always impressed by the sort of range of cultural references on the X-Files, sort of highbrow or lowbrow, quote, you know, we're using quote marks because, you know, it's debatable how useful the terms are. But you've got this sequence inspired by Dostoevsky's The Brothers Karamazov.
And the shootout at the restaurant is at the Brothers K.
And you've got the fast food restaurant named after it as well, yeah. In The Brothers Karamazov, it's kind of a parable one of the characters tells to another character where Christ returns to 16th century Spain, Seville, and the Grand Inquisitor tells him why he should have stayed incognito, basically.
Yeah, should have stayed dead, yeah.
Yeah. Here we've got Jeremiah Smith kind of in the Jesus role, and the Smoking Man is the Inquisitor. I mean, I have mixed feelings about how this plays out on screen, but what do you think?
It's very inconsistent. The first conversation is very purple and just doesn't work. The second conversation is much stronger. The writing is much stronger. It's more focused. I love Roy Thinnes. I think I'm a huge fan of the Invaders. And of course, I mean, the X-Files just takes big chunks out of that show left and right. You know, the whole thing with when the aliens sort of melt away, I mean, that's taken straight from the Invaders. There's, you know, if you watch the Invaders, it's basically two seasons of mythology, of X-Files mythology. I mean, there's so much. You know, and it's interesting when you talk about those literary references. I mean, David Duchovny, you know, was an English major. I think he was, you know, I believe he was going for his PhD at one point.
Yeah, that's right. I believe so, yeah. And
So he was a very well-read, you know, extraordinarily intelligent man. You know, he understands these references backwards and forwards. The interesting backstory here is that he was on a plane with Roy Thinnes, and Roy Thinnes had, you know, introduced himself to David Duchovny and, you know, said, you know, I'm a big fan of your show, and it's like, I'd love to, you know, appear on it if you could figure out a way to do that. And David Duchovny had broached the idea to Chris Carter, and Chris Carter was a huge Invaders fan as well. So he created this character for him, you know, especially for Roy Thinnes. You know, it's funny because those scenes feel a bit inconsistent, you know, a bit fuzzy, a bit purple at times. But William B. Davis loved playing those scenes. Apparently he and Roy Thinnes really hit it off. I mean, they're sort of from the same generation of actors, and they really love playing against each other. For Davis, I believe this is one of his favorite episodes. You know, there are a lot of good moments in this. I mean, I love the scene between Cigarette Smoking Man and Tina Mulder, you know, at the beach house. That's just a fantastic scene. And then we start to get the sense that they had a relationship. You know, that Cigarette Smoking Man may well be the father of both Mulder and Samantha, which, you know, I think is pretty clear towards the end of the series. You know, I think the fight between Mulder and X is very well shot. It's very well staged. But, you know, it's like that sort of feels like the scene from Endgame, and you know, the scenes with Tina Mulder in the hospital kind of feel like one breath. And, you know, and then, you know, he's like, he's approaching Skinner again, you know, wanting to get in touch with Cigarette Smoking Man again, you know, track him down. Yeah. I mean, this is what writers do when they're exhausted, is they sort of do a greatest hits episode. For instance, I mean, the cliffhanger here is just like, really? Is that's all you got? I mean, it's so weak. Alien Bounty Hunter was an interesting character when he's first presented, but he almost starts to feel like a pest at this point in time. It's just like, go away. You know, you're annoying. Not a great episode. Certainly one of the weakest season finales. But at the same time, through this storyline and to Herrenvoke, it's like, Herrenvoke almost feels like homework to me. It's just like, okay, you know, this happened and this happened and this happened. But at the same time, it's like they're setting up plot points that are really going to pay off later on in that season and, you know, into the rest of the mythology. So, you know, even if these episodes kind of feel like an endurance test, this stretch of the mythology, they're putting a lot of interesting themes into play that are really going to pay off and really become sort of fan favorites in a sense.
The cliffhanger, I was going to mention that too. I think it feels like kind of a mid-season two-parter cliffhanger, doesn't it? It doesn't feel like...
It's not a cliffhanger. It's not a cliffhanger, though. I mean, you know, it's just like, okay, so the pest is here. Whatever. Nobody was waiting all summer oh, I've got to see what happens when the pest chases Mulder and Scully and, Jeremiah Smith. I mean, nobody was like marking the calendar to see how that story, line picked off. It's just very weak.
Fortunately, our listeners don't have to wait all summer to see what happens with the alien bounty hunter and Jeremiah Smith, because tomorrow it's Herrenvoke and home. But in the meantime, hopefully people will find us on Twitter at @X_cast or on Facebook. Find the XCast podcast fan group, X-Files Basement. Until next time, listeners, trust no one.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.